hello there, and welcome to the County Conversation, a podcast featuring employees and subject matter experts in Fairfax County government discussing programs, services, and items of interest to residents of Fairfax County. I'm your host, Jim Person. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. This is a crucial time to elevate conversations around a major public health and human rights issue that impacts our community deeply. Joining me today to discuss is Victoria Neville Babla, Human Trafficking and Sexual Violence Coordinator with Fairfax County's Domestic and Sexual Violence Services. Victoria, thanks for being on the County Conversation. Glad to have you.
Thanks for having me for this important conversation.
Absolutely. Your title is a mouthful, but at least you know what you do. Human Trafficking and Sexual Violence Coordinator. Before we get into the topic, tell me, is there a definition for those two terms, and do they differ? I mean, I'm sure they differ, but talk to me a little bit about those two terms when we say sexual violence and human trafficking.
Yeah, absolutely. The title's a mouthful, and the work is certainly a lot, too. Yeah. There's a lot happening in both of these issues, and there's a lot of overlap, which is why, it can make sense for one position or a group of people to really address both in a holistic way. The way that I think about the difference between sexual violence and human trafficking is when abuse is happening for money, that's when we start to look at and investigate, okay, this might be, both sexual violence and it could also be human trafficking. Mm. Human trafficking also involves labor trafficking, which is, again, someone's labor being exploited and abuse that's happening in the workplace for those profits where someone is force, fraud, or coerced into doing something against their will.
Okay. And I'm sure you'll correct me, and I would encourage you to correct me if I'm wrong. I'm going to assume, and you know what happens when you assume, that here in Fairfax County, sexual violence is more of a problem than human trafficking. Is that a correct assumption?
I think it's difficult to say what is more or less of a problem. The way I think about it is even if one person is suffering, even if one person isn't getting the support and the help that they need, it can be, already a huge problem. I think there's an under-recognition of human trafficking where, basically we've heard maybe a lot about it in the media. The media doesn't always get it right. And so a lot of victims can't self-identify. I've almost never had a victim come forward and say, I've experienced human trafficking, please help me. But they come in for different reasons. Maybe it's sexual harassment in the workplace. Maybe it's an older adult who has been taking images of them or paying a child for sexual activities. And that's when we say, hey, this is sexual violence and it's human trafficking. And a lot of times the human trafficking charges are very difficult as well. A lot of cases of human trafficking that I've worked on in the past, maybe they've just been, what you see in the news is somebody's been arrested for illegal possession of substances or firearms or the other related charges like child abuse, possession of child sexual abuse material. So it's definitely a huge issue, and it's underreported, underrecognized, just as sexual assault is as well.
Yeah. Well, that kind of leads into my next question, but I was going to point out some statistics before I got there. Mm-hmm. I think I pulled this from your site or reputable source, and you can correct again if I'm wrong. But according to the stats I pulled, in the United States, almost half of women, about 45%, and nearly one in four men, about 25%, have experienced some form of contact sexual violence in their lifetime, yet two-thirds of sexual assaults are never reported to law enforcement. So that leads me to my question, mm-hmm. Why this culture of silence?
Yeah, exactly. And that's such a huge question. Those numbers are, I believe, CDC numbers. There are so many people who have experienced sexual violence, and part of it is how much it's sort of been normalized, in movies and books and even in our own families growing up. We don't necessarily see people asking explicitly for consent, checking in, making sure things are okay. And there's a lot of self-blame that goes on too with victims, is maybe not knowing necessarily how to enforce their boundaries or not knowing that it wasn't okay that that happened to them. Related to your point about how people aren't reporting, I don't blame anyone for not reporting when, you know, countrywide, there's some statistics up on the RAIN site that most reports to law enforcement will not result in a single day in prison for the person who's causing the harm. Most likely, statistically, it won't result in a conviction. And already so many survivors who do just tell friends and family aren't believed. And so going, taking that extra step and talking to law enforcement, that's an amazing bravery that doesn't work for everyone. And that's okay, but we have to make sure that we have resources set up so that whatever type of support somebody needs, we can support them in that way.
Yeah. Two things. You said the RAIN site. I want to ask you what that is and what it means. But then if people are victims and they already know that it's not going to do a whole lot of good to tell law enforcement and then, you know, get the person prosecuted or some action or whatever, I mean, why do it, I guess?
You know, everyone has what they need for healing. Everyone has what they need for justice. I don't personally, like coming from an advocate perspective where I was first trained in this work on a crisis line, doing hospital accompaniment, working with survivors. Every survivor has a different story. Sometimes the person who's been hurting them is someone who's very important to them, like a family member. Maybe it's one of their parents. Maybe it's someone who they're in a dating relationship with that they really care about. And so it's really up to that individual survivor, and things can change over time too. We've seen laws that, you know, originally there was such a short statute of limitation on sexual assault that once some survivors were able to go through the healing process and then say, actually, I do want to report this. I want, you know, the world to know about this. And I also don't want that person who hurt me to continue hurting others. So I am going to report this. And with that short statute of limitation that used to be in place, there was no opportunity for justice. So some of these laws have been expanding so that survivors can, you know, years later, when they're ready, say, I'm ready to move forward.
So does part of the problem, issue, situation, victims having to relive this if it does go to trial and court, kind of re-traumatizing them, is that a part of it?
It can be really tough. We have trainings that we offer 3 times a year on sexual violence. And those ones, we have this activity called In a Survivor's Shoes, where the groups work together to think about, okay, if I were to go report an assault, how many people would I actually have to tell about what happened to me? And, you know, maybe it starts with, you know, disclosing first to a close family or a friend. But then, you know, if you have to miss time due to work, what do you tell your boss? If you have to miss time in class, what do you tell your professors or your deans or the Title IX investigator at your school or university? And do you tell the person, your resident, or the person who's managing your building in case this person shows up for safety and security concerns? And then, you know, you have to talk to an investigator. Maybe you have to talk to a nurse in the hospital and do the exam and then go and tell your story in front of the whole jury. It's a lot. And again, just speaking to not only the bravery, but the fortitude that it takes for somebody to go through that whole process. That's why I just have so much admiration for people who are able to say, this happened to me. It wasn't okay. It should never happen to anyone else.
Yeah. We often hear that the sexual violence is often the result of a culture that doesn't properly educate people on prevention. How should we be talking and how early should we be talking to our children about, you mentioned consent earlier, mm-hmm. boundaries, healthy relationships, that kind of thing? I'm sure education is part of it and talking about it is part of it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that it can start really young, not necessarily in even introducing the concept of sex, but just introducing that concept of consent, because consent can work in so many different scenarios. You know, if a child doesn't want to hug a certain family member, maybe during the holidays, they can have the right to say, actually, I don't want to hug this relative, or, you know, making decisions about their own body, What they feel comfortable wearing, for example. So the concepts of things like consent can start really young, even before maybe a child is ready to learn about like what sexual activity actually is, because it doesn't have to necessarily be in that that context.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll also say that, like, in general, it's when you speak of rape culture, yeah, there's an education piece of it, and there's also like, how do we change the culture? So all of these times that we see, you know, survivors not being believed when they do come forward, or we see blaming for what happened to them, like, for example, the clothes that they were wearing or the behavior that they had, or we see joking about victims, especially when it comes to male victims. So often it's made into an easy joke. And those are the types of things that uphold rape culture. So it's about talking to your kids, and it's also about, when you see something like that, say something like that, change the narrative. You know, it's not a joke, and we shouldn't be blaming the victim, but let's actually look at the person causing the harm and say, well, why would you do that? Why do you think that's okay? And, you know, having that space to talk about it and hopefully, you know, educate people about healthier ways that they can interact with each other.
I grew up hearing the term stranger danger. Mm-hmm. When we're talking about sexual assault, is it really the stranger that we have to worry about, or is it someone we're closer to us that we already know?
Yeah, again, and you had mentioned Rain earlier, or you had mentioned me saying what Rain
is
earlier. So I'll say again, that's the Rape, Abuse, Incest National Network, and they publish, you know, some of the research, and they look into what statistics are actually happening. And so actually for a lot of these different crimes that we see, whether it's human trafficking, whether it's sexual violence, in about 80 to 90% of cases, it's actually much more likely to be somebody known to you. So it could be someone in your own family, it could be a dating partner, or even an acquaintance. And it's a much rarer case that it is a stranger. But those are, again, just what we see in the media. So then it, you know, makes it harder for victims to self-identify and to recognize what happened to them wasn't okay.
Yeah. We're on the County Conversation podcast, and we're talking about Sexual Assault Awareness Month with Victoria Neville Babla. She is Human Trafficking and Sexual Violence Coordinator with Fairfax County's Domestic and Sexual Violence Services. I had so many more questions I wanted to talk to you about the sexual assault part of it, but we need to make sure we talk about Sexual Assault Awareness Month. What's the importance of having this recognition month, and what do you hope to gain from this calling out of this month?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, related to some of the things that we've already been speaking about, how prevalent this issue is, and then how few people report it or talk about it, you know, people who if one in three or one in six women and men are experiencing sexual violence, but then people don't necessarily know a survivor, it may be because that person hasn't told you about what happened to them. And so how do we raise awareness to create these safe spaces where people can talk about what's happening to them, they can process it? In a study done on Boy Scouts, they actually found that the average age of disclosure for young boys who had experienced sexual violence was over 55 years old. And so just to think about how many people we have in our society who have this deep level of trauma, who have never been able to talk about it with anyone, and are going through their day potentially thinking they're alone in this. And I think that's why the Sexual Assault Awareness Month is so important, because it's saying, actually, you're not alone, and this is something we can talk about. There doesn't have to be this great stigma about it. Please don't feel like it's your fault, because this happens to so many people.
Right. Is there a theme for the month?
For this whole year, our theme is Until Everyone is Safe. And part of the reason why we chose that theme, and we worked with, you know, the community and local partners to get feedback on this theme, it's because we want something that works for survivors of a range of crimes. So whether it's stalking, whether it's domestic violence, sexual violence, human trafficking, we're really in this field, and we're working and we're creating partnerships because we have this, you know, vision of Until Everyone is Safe, and we don't want anyone to be left out of the conversation or feel like their experience doesn't fit.
Right. for someone listening right now who wants to be a better ally, if you will, what's the best way to respond if someone discloses to them that a sexual assault has happened?
Yeah, that's such a great question. For anyone who has the time to go through our 40-hour advocacy training, I highly recommend it. That's how I got started in the field. And I feel like the skills you learn as an advocate are really great for any type of, you know, they're great for work. They're great for interacting with friends and family and personal lives, and improving relationships is something I noticed through going through that advocacy training. For me personally, what I try to leave some of the participants with, especially if I only have, you know, an hour to speak about what's going on, is to try to have people have some phrases in their back pocket. Because so often, if it's someone really close to you, especially if this happened years and years and years ago, the first reaction naturally out of our body is, you know, surprise and shock. But if we have some phrases ready to go, that we can say to our loved ones when they are disclosing something to us, we can just, you know, have like that slightly better response in the moment. And so, one that I like to keep in my pocket is, you know, if it's appropriate, no, it's not your fault. I'm so sorry this happened to you. Thank you so much for sharing this with me. I believe you. Hey, what would you like to do? Do you want to just talk about this? Would you like to report it? Do you just want a tissue and some tea right now? Like, what works best for you in this moment? Because again, everyone has different reactions. Right. And if we can kind of get to what that core need is, and sometimes when somebody's telling you something, that core need is just to feel heard, just to feel understood. I remember when I first trained, being so stressed about the idea of the hotline ringing and having to actually in the moment respond to a victim and thinking, right, what if I say the wrong thing? What if I say the wrong thing? But in reality, what most people want is just to be heard.
Yeah. Somebody to listen.
Somebody to listen, exactly.
Yeah. I think you guys have developed a really great community engagement toolkit for Sexual Awareness Month, which I think has social media graphics, reading lists for adults, teens, and kids. How can someone listening right now, just their everyday person, how would they use their digital platforms and these resources to start meaningful conversations?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll also add that one thing we added this year to our toolkit was our film and TV show list, because we know that, you know, so many people, some people like to read, some people like to watch, right, and maybe, who knows, next year could be a list of songs about sexual violence, because I think those are so powerful as well. And so whatever resonates with you, I would say, you know, keep sharing about that. I, you know, in working with survivors, one conversation that comes up a lot is, you know, where did you learn about healthy relationships? Where did you learn about consent or healthy sexual relationships as well? And a lot of survivors and, you know, members of the public say, I actually don't know of any examples. I can't think of one. And so to whatever degree we can, elevating when we do see those healthy relationships and, you know, modeling those healthy relationships as well for our friends, our family, our kids, we want them to know that they can grow up and expect more and have a healthy relationship as well.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about the resources that the county has for those impacted by sexual assault.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a number of teams at DSVS and then also a number of partnerships across the county. And so some of the things that we offer are free counseling services. And we also have a team that works with people who have used harm in their relationships as well. So we're focused both on working with people who have experienced it and people who have used it so that we can hopefully prevent it in the future. We also have a hotline that's 24/7, free and confidential. The number to that is 703-360-7273. And that crisis hotline is really to work through things that may have happened, learn even more about what resources, maybe get a referral to a community partner based on what your needs are. It can also be really helpful for people who are supporting their loved ones who may have experienced sexual violence. So if you have some vicarious trauma, that means that, you know, your someone that you love has experienced sexual violence and it's impacting you, you can call and learn how to be a better support. You can also call and you can also talk about some of the trauma that you've experienced. And we do see that a lot, especially for parents whose children have experienced sexual violence. Just that feeling of self-blame that this is like their fault that this has happened. And we're here to tell you that no, and that things can be okay, and that you can be a great support to somebody who's experienced sexual violence. It's not, you know, it doesn't mean it has to be the end of anything. It can be a new beginning, a new opportunity to create relationships where you can be open and honest with each other and intervene and notice the signs, recognize the signs. And then finally, we have an advocacy program. So does somebody need referrals to economic resources? Does somebody need a protective order? Does somebody need hospital accompaniment to collect evidence? We can support with that and just make sure that that person is not walking alone in their journey.
I'll repeat that number again, 703-360-7273. Again, however, if it is a truly life-endangering situation, call 911. Anything I haven't asked you want to bring up? Or if not, is there one takeaway you hope our listeners carry away from this conversation?
Ooh, I'll answer both of those.
Okay.
I'll just also say, because April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, that we also, every year, celebrated across the world is Denim Day. It's the last Wednesday in April. And this story happened, or it started in 1992 when a conviction was overturned for the rape of a young woman. She was 18 years old. And basically, they said that because her jeans that she was wearing were too tight, that she must have helped the person who assaulted her take them off. And basically, in response to that, this happened in Italy, and the Italian parliament said, you know what, no matter what someone's wearing, sexual assault is never okay. They don't care if the jeans are tight or if whatever they're wearing. So they actually wore denim the next day to the Italian parliament to protest this overturning of the conviction. And then this became sort of a worldwide movement. You know, even in California, at the state legislature, they also followed suit. And now it's an internationally recognized day, celebrated every year on the last Wednesday in April. And so for Denim Day, again, speaking to this Until Everyone is Safe theme that we have for the year, we do have an art project that we're working on using denim and recycled materials. And if you'd like to learn more about that, please check out our website. You can search for sexual violence or sexual assault. And we have a lot of partners who are already involved, like GMU, Belvoir, local shelters, and then students and libraries. And then the takeaway, because that was the other part of your question. I would say my takeaway is that no one should have to feel alone. I just hope that everyone listening knows that you're not alone in this, and that you can talk to a trusted loved one, you can call our hotline, whatever you need to do to feel that, to know that you're not alone, please, please do that.
Awesome. Victoria, thanks so much for being on the podcast. Enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Important topic to get out there. If you want to get more information and think that preventing sexual violence is something that you want to be part of and learn more, you can search the Community Engagement Toolkit at fairfaxcounty.gov. Just search Fairfax County Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Or if you know someone who needs support, the Domestic and Sexual Violence 24-hour hotline is available, 703-360-7273. If you want to hear more conversation with Fairfax County's finest, be sure to follow us on soundcloud.com/Fairfax County, as well as our podcast webpage, fairfaxcounty.gov/podcast. The County Conversation is produced by the Fairfax County, Virginia government.